Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest. Not so mad. Science on Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio. Black
Hole Radio. Assalamu alaikum. And welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Coming to you live from the city of Oak Park in the dugout. It's baseball season. But apparently, spring has not agreed. A lot of baseball games have been canceled due to weather concerns and weather issues. We got a lot of disappointed high school students out there, as well as baseball officials, umpires, who, for whatever their financial needs and reasons are, depend on these games to make ends meet, to make those few extra dollars necessary to live a comfortable life. But as we had been warned, and I took it as a responsibility to remind of that from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, from the guidance given to him and shared with us all from that master teacher, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, watch the weather. In watching the weather, we see signs of the one above all, the hand that began the process, the hand that's in charge. Regardless of your faith designation, whether you call him Allah, if you're a Muslim, Jesus, the Christ, if you are a Christian, Krishna, if you are Hindu, or whatever your religious theology is, that one who's in charge is in the world today. He's present. And his presence, I just got to say, this is the greatest time in the world to live, right now, to be a witness bearer to God cleaning the deck. He's clearing the deck for his chosen people to then move forward, to live a life in accordance with his will and his direction, his purpose. But this is not so mad science, so we're not going to go down too deep into the theological well of science. You know, my father always said, a good preacher is always prepared, no matter when he or she is called upon to give a mighty word, a thoughtful word. Today is baseball. I hope to do a baseball game today and delay tonight's program. But I'm here in Royal Oaks, Michigan. I'm in the dugout, so to speak, and I'm broadcasting from the dugout in Royal Oak because for whatever reason, the games are delayed, canceled, or what have you. I'm a frustrated preacher, as we all are when we get to open our mouths. So there's always a wealth of science to reach into and to share. To that end, we're going to take a very minor break. And we're going to hear from who we got on the roster today. John P. Key. He's working it out. And while he works it out, I will work it out on my end to bring you that scientific information. This is Not Your Math Science with your host, Alahara Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. And just because I'm not in Detroit does not mean Detroit has lost its soul. We're right. It seems we're having a technical issue here because there's no music playing in the background. So you got to hear me rattle and prattle as I begin to get ready for tonight's program. Let's give it another try with Smokey Norfolk. Apparently, the music does not want to play. So, to that end, we're going to do this on the fly. Again, I'm doing a remote program here, so we may have a few things pop up here and there. So, like I said, I'm a frustrated preacher, and all frustrated preachers have a wealth of information to draw from to preach their gospel. So, what do we have on tap today? We will take a look at the Lyrid meteor shower. Did you know that there's a day called Earth Day? And on Earth Day, for one moment here, not that day, you know, I'm running on a wireless connection here, and it seems to be running a lot slower than my brain is. Okay, here we go. One of the best meteor showers of the year coincides with Earth Day. This means that people all over the world will have a chance to see the 2018 Lyrid meteor shower light up the sky. The Lyrid meteor shower is an annual event, and it actually started last weekend, and it will continue through the end of April. Viewing hours, as I understand it, will begin on the evening of the night of Saturday, April 21st, and extend through the morning of Sunday, April 22nd, on Earth Day. During its peak, the Lyrid meteor shower is expected to bring up to 20 meteors per hour, according to AccuWeather. Now, what do you need to know? You need to know the difference between a meteor and a comet. Okay? According to NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, the Lyrid meteor shower is active and began its movements on April 14th. It is such a big shower that it lasts all the way through Monday, April 30th. But in the northern hemisphere, it peaks in the early morning hours of Sunday, April 22nd. That's when the largest body of meteorites will come through. Now, the difference between a meteor and a comet is meteors are what you call shooting stars. You'll see them shoot by and they keep on going. They don't make landfall. A comet makes landfall. It comes through the atmosphere and doesn't glance off. A meteor will glance off and you see its tail as it shoots on by. Now, those who want to view the Lyrid meteor shower should find an area away from light pollution, meaning city lights. If you're in downtown Detroit, they're not going to see it. If you're in the downtown area of any municipality, you're not going to have a very good chance of viewing it. New York City, forget about it. To go to a place where there are few or the fewest amounts of city lights flooding the air for you to best observe the Lyra meteor shower. Now, while a few meteors may be spotted late at night on Saturday, light from the waxing moon, the moon going out of phase, may interfere with the visibility. After the moon sets around midnight local time, your visibility of the meteor shower should improve. And the adventurous stargazers, and I'm one of them, should be able to see the meteor during a few hours before sunrise on Earth Day. Now, in those places where there is in a moonless sky, you might see from about 10 to 20 Lyra meteors an hour at the shower's peak on April 22nd, according to Bruce McClure, who writes for a noted science journal called Earth Sky. Now, where is the best place to see the meteor shower, you might ask? Well, special equipment, telescopes, binoculars is not needed. It's not necessary to view the meteor shower, which is very safe to view with the naked eye, unlike those who view the solar eclipse with their naked eye and end up with burnt corneas. However, to increase your chances of seeing this annual meteor shower, it's best to head to a dark area away from the light pollution. So the outer suburb going up toward Clinton, in those areas where there are few street lights and things of that nature, you will have the best opportunity to see the meteor shower and its stargazing wonder. And while the Lyra meteor shower should be visible no matter where you're located, there are a few other variables to take into consideration. Hemisphere and weather. For those in the U.S., weather has a map showing what areas of the country will have good or poor conditions for viewing. According to the map, those with the best optics for viewing the meteor shower are on the East Coast, from Pennsylvania to Maine, as well as a swath on the West Coast that includes parts of Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Washington, and California. The Lyra meteor shower favors the northern hemisphere, according to Earth Sky's McClure, because the higher the star Vega climbs into your sky, the more meteors you're likely to see. Vega is part of the constellation Lyra, where the Lyrids get their name, because it looks like they are radiating from the constellation, and is located in the northern celestial hemisphere. However, those in the southern hemisphere will have to wait until the early hours of the morning before reasonable rates can be observed, according to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, ABC. Viewers in Australia will have the best view of the meteor shower on Monday, April 23rd, between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. their local time. Now, the question is, you got to ask yourself, if for those who are into astronomy, not astrology, astronomy. Astrology is fictitious. It's made up. It's something for silly people to play games with. Where astronomy is real science. What is the Lyra meteor shower? Answer. The Lyra meteor shower happens annually, according to NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Again, it's active from April 14th until April 30th and peaks on April 22nd. It is the first significant meteor shower in a few months, according to AccuWeather's astronomy blogger, Dave Samuel, And while it's only a moderately active meteor shower, oldest one on record, and was first recorded by the Chinese in 687 BC. We've been watching the skies a very long time. What stargazers see when they're observing the Lyra meteor shower is the Earth's orbit coming into contact with dust left behind from a comet. In this case, Comet Thacher C1861G1 was discovered in 1861 by A.E. Thacher. Comet Thacher orbits the sun roughly every 415 years, according to NASA. The debris left behind the comet burns up in our atmosphere, creating fiery streaks in the night sky. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. While we jump to our next piece of information, we're going to try once again to light up the airwaves with a little bit of music to see what we have going on. All right. Let's take a looky here at, okay, this is another world, but we're having some technical issues here, this remote location. We're going to try Earth Song by Michael Jackson. Again, we have nothing going out, so you got to listen to me babble and rabble as I move to the next subject matter in tonight's program. Now, if there is a question out there that you'd like to have answered with regard to mathematics, the sciences, physics, biology, earth science, astrophysics, history, theology, metaphysics, call in. Ask your brother a question. Let's see if we can find you an answer. Once again, this is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Our call-in number is 563-999-3089. Again, this is Not So Mad Science. I encourage you to call in. Ask a question. If you have a child who's in school and they're struggling with their math, science, and history, have them give me a call every Tuesday from 6:30 to 8:30. And if need be, we'll run the program from 6:30 to 10 p.m. Our students need a chance to have the world of mathematics and science broken down into a simple term, comprehend and understand, that is not spoken in a language that is above their gradient of understanding and ability. There's no such thing. Every child born into life is a born scientist. Every mother is a teacher. Every father is a doctor. We just have to know that we are, to be who we are, to say that we are. So, once again, that number is 563-999-3089. And if you need the alternative call-in number, that number is 323-927-2913. Once again, 927-2913. Give us a call. Let us help you out. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Our next subject to dive into tonight will be taking a look at it. I don't usually take notes, but I'm reaching into my bag of tricks to always be prepared with a subject to go over, because things that interest me would also interest you. Here we go. There was recently a conversation, and a lot of people who are feminists hailed it as a great moment. In the world of science, there is no genderism. There is only the science. There is the need for one with the capacity to answer the call to provide the service that is needed to further the science. Your gender means nothing. It is irrelevant and is ignorant for those who consider themselves academics to imply gender writers in the world of science. So, Jim Taylor, writing for the BBC 5 Live, said that the first person to go to Mars should be a woman. Now, this person is a senior NASA engineer. Quite frankly, I like to hit him over the head with a brick. Maybe he'll have an ignat moment, you know, from Crazy Cat. But he says the first person to set foot on Mars should be a woman. Allison McIntyre puts a prospective space traveler through their paces at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, noted that all 12 people who have walked on the moon were men. She believes women should be at the forefront if and when the agency sends its first human mission to Mars. BBC Radio 5 Live has been behind the scenes at NASA in Texas and Florida. They have been meeting women at the forefront of the 21st century space race. It's more than half a century since Russia sent the first woman into space, and 40 years since NASA selected its first female astronaut. But there still hasn't been a woman on the moon. And women remain, according to this writer, underrepresented in science and engineering industries on both sides of the Atlantic. My question then becomes, why? Why should it be a woman? Because the first ones to the moon were men? Is that your reasoning? Why was it that it was only men that were sent to the moon? That question needs to be asked. There was a reason behind that. It had nothing to do with gender. It has a lot to do with physicality. It has to do with the nature in which men and women are fabricated, structured, and built. Idea of the incapacity of a woman being able to do something is not relevant. It is not a cognitive issue. It is a structural issue for the times of stress and conditions necessary. But let's continue. Allison has an incredible view from her office on the floor of the Space Vehicle Mock-Up Facility at Johnson Space Center in Houston. That huge building is packed with full-size versions of the International Space Station, modules, and other spacecraft, where astronauts train before going into space. Alice is in charge of the facility. She says she loves it there. They're going to have to take me out of here kicking and screaming when it's time for me to do something else. She's been with NASA for nearly 30 years and has seen huge changes in that time. She says, and I quote, "My center director is a woman. My former division chief is a woman. We have female astronauts, but we haven't put a woman on the moon yet. And I think the first person on Mars should be a woman. Give me a reason, dingbat." What they're not adding in this article here, when you do the research on this particular woman, who is a scientist in her own right? Is she speaking from a scientific point of view, which is really only where she should be coming from, or is she speaking from her social point of view, which is specifically because something hasn't been done, doesn't mean it won't be done, nor does it relegate women to second-class genderitis in the world of science. Did that exist at one time at NASA? Yes. We have found that to be true. There would not have been an Apollo program were it not for the women number crunchers, the mathematicians, engineers, and scientists in the background who worked out the math for the Apollo space flights to take place to get to the moon. Yes, those black women suffered greatly, a dual issue. One, they were black women. Two, they were women in a world and a field dominated by Caucasian men. So they were hidden away from the world. But had it not been for those five women crunching the numbers and putting the numbers together and working out the problems, there would not have been an Apollo space program. Their cognitive abilities to put those numbers together, superhuman, to say the least. But were they physically capable of making those first trips to the moon in a science that had yet to be discovered and worked out? Question be answered? No, they couldn't. They were experimenting on themselves. Can you imagine the social unrest that in an experimental program, as with the Apollo astronauts that died in the efforts to get off the launching pad, what that would have done to the society of people looking at that program? The space program would have been shut down. Why? Because there's women dying. Mothers dying. Daughters dying. Being experimented on by a bunch of men. So does it make sense socially? Does it make sense morally? No, it doesn't. Work the bugs out on yourselves first, then send me. But let's continue. Allison has been a NASA employee for 30 years. She says NASA astronaut Karen Nyberg has already spent more than 6 months in space aboard the International Space Station. She says, "When I was selected as an astronaut in 2000, I thought that might be a realistic possibility that we would be the next to go to the moon. So it's unfortunate we weren't. On the prospect of women walking on the moon," Karen said, "it will happen. There's a lot of politics. Money is needed, so it's really hard to see it not go faster. Eventually, it will happen." Spoken of his desire to see American astronauts return to the moon, a shift from the Barack Obama focus on Mars. Kavya Maniapu is among those hoping to follow in Karen's footsteps. having spent most of her life of dreaming of becoming an astronaut. She's currently working at Johnson's facility, where her employer, Boeing, is developing a spacecraft for NASA to ferry astronauts to the International Space Station. There have been times, she says, during her studies, when she's been the only female engineer among 70 men. That didn't strike me until I had to use the bathroom, and there was a long line in the men's restroom. I was the only one using the women's. It would be awesome and inspiring to have a woman take the first steps on Mars, and I don't mind volunteering for that. Flight Director Emily Nelson agrees that the failure to put a woman on the moon is a much a reflection of changing priorities within the space industry. We haven't seen anybody on the moon for a while. So if the question is that we haven't seen anybody on the moon for a while, why is it an issue where we haven't put a woman on the moon yet? Again, the moon is no longer a priority. Go to the moon to do what, for what, and when? What are you going to the moon this time to find out? Just to say that a woman's been there? You think people are going to put billions, close to trillions of dollars together just so that you can have a gender issue clarified for you? You're a scientist, so stop being so damn stupid. That doesn't make sense. In the world of science, stupidity has no place. And there have been a lot of stupid scientists out there. A lot of them. And maybe on one of these programs, I'll give you the list of stupid scientists and their viewpoints, both male and female, that got a lot of people killed. Matter of fact, I think I'll name a few before we end tonight's program. From Emily's desk in the mission control room at Johnson's, she's responsible for keeping astronauts safe aboard the International Space Station. Now, you got to realize what the flight director for NASA is. The flight director is in charge. The flight director is the boss. The flight director says yay or nay as to who does and who does not go. Can the flight director say a woman can't go? Yes. Will the flight director say a man can't go? Yes. So the crew of any U.S. space vehicle going to the International Space Station is under the purview, review of the flight director. Launch, no launch. Go, no go. That's the flight director's job. And it is this woman, Emily Nelson, who makes that decision. She says, we've devoted a lot of time to building our knowledge base about flying in space in general. When we last went to the moon, our ability to stay there for any length of time was really limited. Can you imagine now? This is my question. The global, the world view of what is considered to be the preeminent free society of sending a woman to the moon or a group of women to the moon. And something happened and they died. How does that, would that have changed the international view of this country of how women are looked upon? What would that have done for the masses of women who wanted to go into the field of engineering and the sciences? What would that have done for their social purview? Is putting a woman on the moon more important than being the one who decides who does and does not go? You know, there's an old axiom that I read in a book called The Protocols of Zion. And in the book, The Protocols of Zion, there's a on a page where it says, the Zionists, they did not care who was the president, premier, or whatever of a, whatever country. They did not care. So that's what the public sees. What they cared about was they want to control the money, because the one that controls the money is the one. Everything else is just sanity. Yeah, you want to be the astronaut and take a chance and have a death wish to risk your life to die, when in reality, the one who makes the decisions is the one who goes down in history. Is never the one that the public sees. It's the one who writes the history. Once again, this is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, it's baseball season, and I'm here in Royal Oak, in the dugout, waiting for the delay to be relayed. But since we delay, science will not play. The science must continue. It's cold outside. Took another sip of coffee here. Something has to keep the chill away. Let's continue. Emily says, we needed to take some time to make more robust technologies to be able to build life support systems and spacesuits and systems that will allow you to stay in space for a while. Russian President Vladimir Putin has talked recently about Russian missions to the moon and Mars. But Emily isn't excited about the prospects of a new space race. You would get inflated budgets, but if your goal is just to beat somebody, what do you do when you achieve that goal? Aha! The goal should be something sustainable, something that means something for furthering humanity's reach into the universe. She is absolutely correct. It has nothing to do with gender. It has all to do with design, direction, function, and purpose. Male or female is an asinine view of why you should do something. Can a man have a baby? No. Can a woman have a baby? Yes. But can she have the baby without the of that man? Absolutely not. So what comes first? The chicken or the egg? Hell no. Man must be present in all things for all things to happen. You can't beat the science. XY versus Y. Why? Because we like you, M-O-U-S-E. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Let's continue. Aside from the inflated budgets and the need to maintain some sensibility about what we do with regards to going into space and what we're going into space for, having to achieve a purposeful goal to elevate humanity's reach into the universe. She also says, and I quote, we've kind of grown past that. We don't need to compete like we were going, like we were doing back then in the 60s, during the time of JFK. Gio Amasa is a project engineer in NASA's Veggie Lab at the Kennedy Space Center. She's experimenting with testing different methods of growing food so that plants can be grown. And other than a woman not being on the moon, there are women that are on the International Space Station from multiple disciplines and multiple countries. It is exactly that. It is an international co-educational environment in space. Women are not devoid of the various departments and structures and systems that make all these things possible. But why the feminist approach? I'm still looking for that answer. As humans go further into space, the more important it becomes that they can grow rather than take everything with them. They also use an artificial soil, which is designed to replicate the surface of Mars. Gioa says she has often found herself to be the only woman in a room. So what? Imagine being the only black person and you're not allowed in the room, but the dance show will take your work and use it as if it's their own. Welcome to the club. Life is not fair. This world is not fair. But the science must march on. She said that if she has suffered discrimination during her career, she might not have noticed because she's off in my own little scientific world. So being the only woman in the room, she has suffered no ill from that. She said if there was any discrimination, she didn't even notice it. Significant in comparison to what she was there to do and what she was doing. Misty Snokowski, that's a mouthful. Her role with NASA involved working on the Elon Musk SpaceX, who, like Boeing, are aiming to send astronauts to the International Space Station. She says the excitement around their recent launches reminds her of the days of the Space Shuttle, the iconic spacecraft, which flew 135 missions between 1981 and 2011. Women were a part of the deaths that took a toll on the Space Shuttle program. Did you forget Challenger and the three women that died there? They got off the launching pad, but they never got past the stratosphere. Some were even still alive yet after the initial O-ring explosion, or rather the failure of the O-ring into the explosion, and they never got a chance to get into the escape pod. They died in their seat. Are women a part of the space program? You damn sticky. They have given their cognitive ability and they've given their lives and shed their blood. Stop being a putz and put your feminism in your back pocket. Sit down and flatulate a little bit. Maybe you might begin to make some sense to yourself. Let's continue. Misty says, when I was a little girl, I was always into science, always into math. I liked Star Trek, The Next Generation. I was a total nerd like that in high school. When Misty took her first engineering job, she was the only woman among 200 men. I found I had to work harder than my colleagues to make sure I always had the answers that I wasn't ever behind. I would love to see a female administrator. That's a huge job, and that would be great for NASA. Well, there is a female administrator at NASA, and she's the boss. She is the flight director. Until flight says go flight, there is no flight. Nobody goes nowhere. But if a whirlwind does not set foot on Mars or the moon in the coming years, it won't be missing. She gets motion sickness, she says, really bad. I will be the person to help you get there, but I won't be going myself. The issue of sending a woman to the Mars or to the moon is as idiotic as walking across a highway during rush hour and thinking you're not going to get hit. It's just stupid. We make up, there's a tendency to make up gender issues that do not exist. But if you want to roll the dice and play with your life and die, for a feminist point of view and not the advancement of humanity, I would like to help you on your way. Let's experiment on you, and when you drop dead from the experiment, we can then take the data from your loss of life and up to someone else that can make it. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit. In this case, I'm in Royal Oak. I'm in the dugout. It's baseball season, but the weather does not seem to agree. We're going to once again try to take a musical break, and we're going to see what happens when whatever happens. We're going to try Michael Jackson one more time. This is The Way You Make Me Feel. Once again, for whatever reason, we have no sound for the music. Whatever that problem is, it will eventually work itself out at some point. So I'm going to keep on rattling on, and I pray you bear with me while we go to our next subject. We just beat up on NASA. Who are we going to beat up on now? Okay. Did you know? Bye-bye. So let's wonder why there was a flyby and most people didn't know about it. Let's take a look. And why can't we take a look? It's because I'm not getting any cooperation. Ah, here we go. On April 15th, Ryan F. Mandelbaum reporting an asteroid approximately the size of a football field flew close by Earth on the day after it was first spotted over the weekend. Considered to be a near miss. Okay. This near miss is a perfect example of an argument that he's been making for some time. These are the asteroids we should worry about, not the so-called potentially hazardous rocks being tracked by NASA and periodically hyped by panic headlines. There are some who would say, I'm the other half of the Doom and Gloom Network, where my brother Rudolph is gloomy, and then I'm the other half, I'm just doomy. Doom and gloom. We got nothing happy to say about nothing. So I'm going to throw a monkey wrench into those persons who believe I'm doomy all the time. And you'll see why as I get to the end of this particular report. NASA scientists first observed the asteroid, now called 2018 GE3, on April 14th of this year, according to a database. It ventured as close as halfway the distance between the Earth and the Moon, And that's pretty damn close. And it was estimated to be between 47 meters and 100 meters in diameter. For those who don't comprehend meters very well, that's somewhere between 150 to 330 feet. This is smaller than the asteroid governed by the NASA goal, which is to track 90% of near-Earth objects larger than 150 meters, in this case 460 feet in diameter. Nevertheless, it still could have caused a lot of damage if it had hit the Earth. If you read tabloids or Google News headlines, you probably hear about potentially hazardous asteroids all the time. But like we've said before, those are not the asteroids you need to worry about. Potentially hazardous asteroids are those that NASA has determined could possibly hit the planet in the distant future. Generally those within 20 lunar distances of the Earth and 140 meters in diameter or larger. The rock that flew past us this weekend was not a potentially hazardous asteroid. Surprising as that may sound, it was not, even though it split the difference between the Earth, because no one was tracking it until April 14th. Even if such an asteroid striking the Earth could have been catastrophic on a local or a regional level only. And it's not like scientists don't want to track these things. It's just hard to do. As live science explains here, their small position makes them less reflective, so they're harder to spot with a telescope. They're also fast, and you need a system of telescopes to detect them. But 2018 DE3 is not that small. The 140-meter cutoff was set up because impacts and objects of that size would only produce regional effects, while larger objects would have corresponding wider effects, according to a NASA Planetary Defense FAQ, or FAQ. But an asteroid close in size to 2018 GE3 could have caused the Tunguska event. For those who's not familiar, in Tunguska, Germany, somewhere up in, near the Arctic Circle. Well, I wouldn't say the Arctic Circle, but in the far northern reaches of Russia, an asteroid impacted, whose impact was felt globally and wiped out an entire region in Tunguska, Germany. Russia. So, a 140-meter object could have possibly caused the Tunguska event, as well as the Chelyabinsk meteor was probably only 20 meters in diameter. If 2018 GE3 had hit a city, let's say New York, it would have been very, 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 very bad. Now, I don't want to overstate the risk. Space is huge. And relatively speaking, it is very unlikely that something hits the Earth. That same NASA FAQ or fact page does not say that a meteor like the Chelyabinsk should only strike once or twice a century. And bigger objects would be several times rarer. But they make it clear, given the current incompleteness of the near-Earth object catalog, and unpredicted impacts, such as a television event, could occur at any time. Again, let's give this some perspective. One, massive Earth impacts from meteors are not regular. They're very, 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 very irregular. They're rare. Not so rare that it doesn't happen, but rare that it happens in any single individual lifetime. And they're quite unpredictable. And frankly, ain't a damn thing right now today's technology could do about it. But if such an meteor did hit New York City, goodbye, New York. Life will go on. If it hit Moscow, goodbye, Moscow. Guess what? Life will go on. Because there's no means to stop it, to deflect it. The technology, the science, or the ability to do so is not there. This is not the movies. This is not Armageddon. You're not going to send Bruce Willis up in a daggone spaceship with some miners, oil well drillers, drill a hole and blow the thing apart. It's just not going to be there. But there is a line in that movie that is relevant. A conversation between Billy Bob Thornton's character, who is the flight director of NASA, and the president, who's listening to him discuss this with his team over the phone, who says, "Mr. President, right now we're able to observe maybe 1% of the sky because of the budget that we have to deal with. Because the president wanted to know why they didn't see this big old asteroid coming." He said, "Well, with the given budget, we can only see 1% of the sky. And quite frankly, Mr. President, it's a really big-ass sky." Well, it ain't the final frontier, but it's a big-ass sky. Again, so I don't want to overstate the risk, but we can't be foolish to think that these things don't happen. They do happen, and life will go on. So don't stick your head in the sand. Don't be an ostrich. Chances of it happening to you or in your lifetime are remote at best. Thankfully, the 2018 GE3 did strike the Earth. And irresponsible headlines will go on worrying about ridiculous non-threats like Planet X. Give it a break. But you might wonder, can be done to ensure we can spot asteroids like this one sooner? Because let's say there was an asteroid and you could predict its trajectory and it was going to hit New York. And you could find out about it, let's say, 4 days in advance. You got 96 hours. Could New York City and the surrounding areas up to 50 miles or more in either direction, but in this case, there's nothing 50 miles out to see from the city of New York, but you have to clear out all of Bergen County, New Jersey, all of Essex County, New Jersey, all of Hudson County, New Jersey, as far as the Delaware Water Gap, as far north as Poughkeepsie or Harding, New York, as far south as the South Shore beaches of New Jersey going down to Philadelphia or further, that if it hit that area, could you evacuate that area in 96 hours, or would you cause more death in the panic for people trying to get away? What would you do? Could you do? Yes, the earlier you know, the better you can do. But we have shown an inability to manage emotionally burdened ignorance. We lack the capacity. And I'm not saying we as in me. I'm talking we as in them. You people who think you're in charge, you don't have the capacity, the ability, because you don't have the concern for human life as you should, because it's a really big-ass sky. You're looking for opportunity to colonize, and you marginalize human life here because you're looking for your colony there. But if you took care of here better, it wouldn't be a deterioration of the ozone layer. That part of the sky that helps protect the earth from these kinds of things, where the thicker the atmosphere, the more things would bounce off. But we're a planetary body in a universal state. Things do collide. It's part of the natural order, creating panic and hysteria. Yes, you want to be able to track it. Yes, you want to be able to have at least a month or more's notice if you tracked it better. But the budget given to tracking, to locating, is insignificant in comparison to your budget for finding colonizable space. Anyway, this is still in the territory of odds. You shouldn't worry about. So upgrading our country's space observation capabilities would be nice. Still, next time you see the ubiquitous story about a potentially hazardous asteroid, remember that anything NASA is currently tracking is of no consequence to our safety. Unknown stuff that might do damage. And again, it's might do damage. Because there is a far greater power available that we don't rely on. What is the single most powerful weapon available that is never used? It is the human mind and the potential of that human mind to manipulate reality around it. Can you imagine the sum total computing capacity of the human mind on a global level in unison, what it could do to change the surrounding environment to accommodate its reality? We do it all the time on such insignificant levels. Can you imagine what it could do on the communal level, on the global level, to change its reality and to maintain its safety? It's not so mad science. And I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Yes, it's baseball season, but the weather does not agree. Winter and spring are locked in battle, and it seems winter is still kicking spring's ass. Oh, yeah. Well, let's continue. What else do we have on tap today, Brother Harold? Well, let's take a looky. Let's see what's on the hook. Well, now, taking a look at some of the stupidity in the world of science. Yeah, I think one of the most stupidest things I've come across in terms of that are our poor brethren in the flat earth community. Poor things. You know, I hate to laugh at them, but I can't help myself. According to Newsweek magazine, Louis Valesky has some interesting opinions he thinks exists, and humans have never been to the moon. He's a resident of Melbourne, Australia. Valesky expounds on his point of view on his YouTube channel, Earth of Mankind, and according to him, it earns him up to $5,400 a month. He's espousing foolishness. And I am reminded of the words of my father, my teacher, my leader, my guide, my spiritual source, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. He said, and I quote, "Give anybody a platform or a pulpit, and they will find another fool just as foolish as they are to follow them and to support them." Well, apparently, there's proof in the pudding because this idiot gets supported with $5,400 a month from a YouTube channel espousing stupidity. Conspiracy theories, it turns out, are very profitable for the YouTube-inclined entrepreneur. On his channel, Peladophobian, Ryan Sylvie, 18 years ago, and also from Australia, posts videos like "School is Illuminati" and "Donald Trump is Vladimir Putin." Those satirical. The videos may be lumped in with other contrarian or esoteric posts in search results. Sylvie makes more than $7,500 a month on average from advertisements that some of his 628,000 subscribers view. Remember now, this kid is 18 years of age. Now, YouTube also makes a bundle. About 55% of the money companies take to put their 30-second ads at the start of popular videos goes to the content creators. The rest goes to Alphabet, the site's parent company. It reported more than $110 billion in revenue in 2017. Up from $90 billion in 2016. Nearly 90% of that figure came from ads, and a growing number were on YouTube. Created in 2005, YouTube is the Internet's dominant video content platform. People around the world watch about 1 billion educational videos on the site each day. And more people are using it as a news source. But media reports have implicated YouTube criticism, often on account of conspiracy videos touting false information. With Facebook now under government scrutiny and possibly facing regulation, YouTube is taking measures to ensure its own integrity. And that could mean the end of the conspiracy video business. I think not. YouTube's platform is, you're putting it out there. To you, the viewer, to authenticate and validate what you're viewing. Is it real or not real? Is it satirical or is it concrete? As the viewer, that is your responsibility. This is the basis of YouTube. You're your own studio. They're just a platform by which you air what you air. Is it educational? Sometimes. Is it entertainment? Sometimes. It's not like Facebook, which touted itself on and with the restrictions of being a viable system, YouTube is something different. Once again, this is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, for the Harold Muhammad Hill and the Black Hole Radio Network. Let's continue. Concerns about these videos could seem overblown. Take a post claiming a geomagnetic storm on March 18th would disrupt satellites, GPS navigation, and power grids across the planet. I did a program on this, and I got highly burnt by it. The video was misleading, but likely harmless. Not really. There are those who died because of their inability to truly understand what was being said, which is the importance of a program like Not So Mad Science, where it takes those things that, in its subject matters, that are essentially very technical in terms of its language, where language is shifted across broad spectrums, where the layman and the educated meet, but the uneducated, the layman really doesn't understand what is actually being said. So these similar terminologies are being cross-breeded across, and there are those who get caught in that mix, that torrent of verbiage, get lost, get confused, and ultimately sometimes get hurt and lose their life as a result of that. Someone needs to take responsibility to explain these things so that that doesn't happen. And those who do those kinds of things need to take better responsibility for what they say and how they say it, knowing that there are those who are going to get caught in that convergence of language and get lost. Be responsible. Make yourself plain so that you can be better understood by those who you know are going to be hearing what you say and don't fully understand. Others may have played a part in recent tragedies. The person who drove a car into a pedestrian on the London Bridge in 2017 and stabbed patrons in nearby bars may have watched videos from a Salafist preacher on YouTube. After the rally last August in Charlottesville, Virginia, by so-called alt-right, the New Republic called the platform the worldwide leader in white supremacy. After the Las Vegas shooting in October of 2017, the Wall Street Journal caught the algorithm suggesting videos claiming the death was a false flag. Until the algorithm changed, five results for a search among Las Vegas shooting included a video claiming government agents were responsible for the attack. Again, these things are opinion. And people who listen to these things to find whatever value they individually find are looking for an excuse for someone to say it's okay to do the deviant things that they do. Now, I'm not saying that it's not the fault of YouTube. It is the fault of the public for not doing their homework. These are just people spousing their opinion. And opinions, just as they say, are like assholes. Everybody's got one. You got to wash your ass. Simple. And by wash your ass, I mean do your research. Don't be led around by the bull ring that you fools put in your nose septum and get drug around by. It's not attractive. You look stupid. Whether it be the actual or the empirical bull ring in the nose. You're not an animal. You are a human being. Act like one. Use your brain for more than a hat stand or a new hairstyle. Now, the writer says from his experience in the disinformation space, Jonathan Albright wrote, the research director of the Toast Center for Digital Journalism in an essay on Medium, all roads seem to eventually lead you to YouTube. Addressing the problem is tricky because what constitutes a conspiracy isn't always clear. Simply because someone says these things are a conspiracy theory does not mean that it's not necessarily true. Do UFOs exist? Yes. Conspiracy theory? No. But it is slashed in the general public because mainstream media says it's a conspiracy theory. Well, people believe what they see, people believe what they know, and too many people have seen and interacted with unidentified flying objects simply because they've done it, and it's there. But mainstream media does not acknowledge it, meaning that its discussion is a conspiracy. Now you got to ask the question, do predictions for 2018 include Italy's Mount Vesuvius will erupt and kill hundreds of thousands of people? Count? What about Shane Dawson, who routinely posts videos on his channel but doesn't necessarily endorse one video that posits, among other things, that aliens may be related to the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370? Began with the disclaimer that these are all just theories and they are not meant to hurt or harm any company. That's legal, understandable. But you got to put the questions out there. The difficulty of pinpointing whether or not a post qualifies as a baseless fringe view is part of the issue. Without a definition, YouTube's algorithm can't filter out such videos from its search results. Doesn't this begin to sound like multimedia McCarthyism? That's what it sounds like to me. That's a problem for Alphabet, though, which is afraid that the spread of conspiracy theory videos across YouTube could backfire. False information seeping into top recommended video list could eventually drive customers, anyone who watches YouTube videos, away. Not likely, in my opinion, personally. Our brand may also be negatively affected by the use of our products or services. Alphabet's 2017 annual report stated to disseminate information that is deemed to be misleading. Yet the site incentivizes content creators to wander close to the extreme view's edge because they entice users to click. The video by Dawson about the disappeared plane garnered 8 million views, 8 million views, likely earning him and Alphabet thousands of dollars. Algo Transparency, a website that tracks what videos YouTube recommends to visitors, notes that searching for the phrases "is the earth flat or round" or "vaccine facts" in February led to videos claiming to show proof the earth is flat or evidence that vaccines cause autism. Well, here's the thing. For those who consider themselves to be flat earthers, it is understood to be recognizable dilly-daddle, twaddle-floddle, mishmash of stupid people. Do vaccines cause autism? Well, guess what? That is a confirmed medical fact. Can't get away from it. Can't call it a conspiracy, though the pharmaceutical companies want you to believe that. Hey, you can't argue with proof. They do, respectively, about 8 times more often than videos without a conspiracy bent on these other subjects. When Valesky began producing conspiracy-type videos, he received more views and more money for them than those focused on alternative medicine and health topics. YouTube has some radical views of its own. In January, videos on controversial topics like chemtrails, and I did a show on that myself, but I'm not on YouTube. We discussed chemtrails and its impact and the evidence of it. Chemtrails being the condensation left by airplanes that some people think is dangerous chemicals. Well, we proved that to be the case. they would no longer be eligible to run ads. And later this year, panels will accompany any video on a topic surrounded by conspiracy theories, such as the moon landing or John F. Kennedy's assassination. We'll have supplemental information from third-party sources like Wikipedia. The company declined to name other potential sources. Valesky isn't looking forward to the change. As he sees it, the encyclopedia-based panels will denigrate what many people consider to be legitimate, if controversial, perspective on important topics. To make a topic look silly because it's not mainstream, he says, I don't think it's entirely fair, and I agree. When it comes to true believers, though, strategy to post facts alongside these videos might not work anyway. Jovan Byford, a researcher at the Open University in the United Kingdom, points out the flaws in using rational arguments to debunk conspiracy theories. That doesn't work, he says. Their argument for that will be, well, that's what they want you to believe. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host for the Harold Muhammad here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We're now coming down to the 4-minute mark into tonight's program, and guess what? It's still baseball season, and the weather is not going along with it. Winter and spring are duking it out, and spring is getting its butt kicked. Winter is holding on, and it's holding on with a vengeance. And baseball still wants to be played. I want it played because I get paid when we play. And right now, I need the money. I need the money so bad I can eat. Well, never mind. I got bills to pay, children to feed, water to keep on, and electric that needs to be repaired because the power lines went down from the winter storm that has passed through. Just to let everyone know, do you know I've been without power in my house now for 3 days? Thank God I had the insight to buy a home with a fireplace. I can keep my house warm. My gas is on so we can still cook. So we're old schooling it. No electricity? Read a book by firelight. Do your homework by candlelight. It makes you have to get into the grassroots of your intellectual thinking, and you become one with yourself. You're no longer individually fractured. You got to pull yourself together to be able to sit and read and think without background noise. I got to keep my water on. I need these games. But winter and spring are duking it out. So baseball can't be played. I can't get paid. But guess what? I still have air to breathe. The sun will be up tomorrow morning. Because there's a power greater than us all collectively. And he says, be. And I know that it is. But every day we lay our heads down at night, we wake up, we don't have to worry about whether we can breathe. We don't need to worry about whether the sun is there. It's there, we breathe. Whether the clouds block it or not, we always have it there. So once again, this is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network, leaving you, as I always do, with a greater hope for tomorrow than we have today. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. I'll see you next time.